It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin. It's time for Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Hail to the victors. Hail to the conquering heroes. Michigan, your champion. They did it with five transfers. They win their first title since 1989, 69-63. What a game, because UConn never gave up. The biggest lead was 11 in the game for Michigan. We'll talk a bit about that and more in our second segment with our SEC historian, Ron Higgins. Great, great year for the Big Ten. The Big Ten won both the basketball titles, girls and men, and they won the football national title. You know, Landon Schmidt, who's the number one baseball team in America?
Not off the top of my head.
UCLA.
Okay, I should probably guess
that. Another Big Ten team.
Kind of hard to believe they're Big Ten, though.
Big Ten. Big Ten now, baby. In this new world, it's the Big Ten. Big Ten. You could say it means more for the SEC, but the Big Ten is the league racking up all of the titles. So in that title game, defense everywhere. Michigan averages 94. They were 25 below their average. They usually out-rebound people, get a lot of second-chance points. That belonged to UConn with less height. It was amazing. But it was points in the paint versus three, and when you get points in the paint, you foul. That's the one thing that UConn really did a poor job with. They fouled while in the paint. They couldn't defend without fouling, so there was a great discrepancy there. So this is interesting how the math worked up. Points in the paint, one to the tune of 14 by Michigan, okay? Free throws, 13 more free throws made by Michigan. That's 27 points. Three-point shooting, oh, my God. Michigan was terrible. Usually they're a very good three-point shooting team. They hit two threes. They were outshot from three-point range by seven. Nine made for UConn, two for the Wolverines. That's a difference of 21. Take the 27 from the free throws and the point in the paint. You'd subtract the 21 from three-point line. 6 points! 69-63. Just thought that that was interesting. Yexel was really picked up by his teammates. He couldn't do it. He's the most honest guy I've ever seen in all these interviews. You know, he was asked at the half by Tracy Wolfson. She said, You had a little rough go of it, and he goes, I was terrible. I was soft. I feel weak. He's been injured. He's got a knee injury. He's got an ankle injury. He's really not near 100%. Yet he gave it everything he had. He played every minute of the first half poorly, and then he was taken out for offensive and defensive substitutions down the stretch. But he was picked up by the MOP, the most outstanding player. That was Elliot Cadeau. He's only a junior. How much money do you think he's going to make from NIL next year? He was picked up by Johnson. He was picked up by the big guy, Mira. They really were a team. Dusty May took five transfers. He said afterwards, this was unique. I don't think you can do it every year. He would love to have more consistency and continuity, guys coming back, but it didn't work out that way. Just remember, this was a terrible team of Juwan Howard's just 2 years ago. Then they made the Sweet 16 the first year under Dusty May. Dusty may not be the most eloquent guy of all time, but he's unreal as a coach. He did it at FAU. Now he's done it at Michigan. He says he's not going anywhere. I don't blame him. They get their title. UConn finally lost a final game. Remember, between Calhoun, Ollie, and Hurley, they had played for six national titles. They won every single one of them. And I do feel bad because you had Hurley and Alex Caraban trying to win a third title in 4 years. You have to go back to John Wooden for that to have occurred. Caraban leaves UConn with 126 wins in the 4 years. 126 wins and two titles. What a career for him. And Danny Hurley, he's another guy that can coach because he did not have as much talent as Michigan, I didn't think. He kept them in the game by mucking it up, really playing physical, and it worked. And he had guys that could shoot. So that was interesting. We're going to talk a little bit about this new pro event that's going to take place at Pine Hill for women. It's the Sapphire Circuit. Will Keyes is going to join us in a minute. The portal is officially open on April the 7th. We're here. What are the Tigers going to do? Because they got to put a whole new team together. At this point, they've only got two guys returning, Thedford and Wharton. Wharton is probably, you know, somewhere between the 11th, 12th, to 15th guy. So who is Penny going to bring in? Thedford will be in the top five. Jason Muntz on the Commercial Appeal will talk about that. And before we are joined by the pro at Pine Hill, I got to talk Grizzlies. The Grizzlies set the record or tied the record last night for threes made in a game. And somehow, because they want to, they lost. They didn't play any defense. That crazy game, 142, they gave up 142 points. 142 to 126 to Cleveland, that wasn't playing everybody. They made 29 threes in the game. Nine different guys had at least one three. They actually shot 49% from downtown. They only shot 45% from inside the arc. They were better from outside the arc than in. That's just amazing. How about Adama Ball and Derek Whitehead? When did Whitehead even join the team? They each had six threes. Somehow they were able to lose the game. That's their 18th in the last 20 games as they endeavor to try to get as many ping pong balls as they possibly can. I sit in the Family Leisure studio, and a reminder, we still got the floor model sale going. Soon we'll have chemicals, and I know you need them now with all that pollen and the, I call them the wormies, those buds that come down from the trees. They're all over your pool, right? They're going to have chemicals that'll help you clean all of that up. But until that starts, we still have the floor model sale going on. Go see Lindsay, go see Billy. There are still floor model sales that are so big. If you want a hot tub, if you want a spa, if you want one of those swim spas, cold plunges, they got them at really reduced rates. So cash in while you can. I'm not sure how much longer it'll last. Go and check it out at I-40 and Witten Road, just a little bit to the north and to the east. And you will see the great showroom with all those floor models on sale at Family Leisure. We head down to Pine Hill. One of our favorite pros, Will Key, joins us now with exciting news. There is a new pro tournament in town. It's called the Sapphire Tour. This particular matchup at Pine Hill is going to be called the Bluff City Classic. Will, if you don't mind, good morning. How did this whole thing come about? How did you get this tournament here for your golf course?
Hey, good morning, Willow. Well, first of all, I just received an email from my administrator, who's Nikki Barker, administrator of golf for the city of Memphis. And so I guess I'm imagining that Tariq DeLavala, he's the commissioner of the Sapphire Tour and the UGA. he recently relocated to Memphis, and he wanted to have a women's professional tournament here. So they had a 5-city tour last year, and this year will be a 6-city tour. So Memphis will be the kickoff, starting the tour. They'll go to Atlanta, Chicago, DMV. We're excited. We're ready to have the tournament. The ladies are coming from all across the country, so hopefully we'll get some turnout. Hopefully everybody in Memphis comes out and bring their kids and have a good time.
Will, are these women, are they aspiring to become touring LPGA pros? Are they former college players? Are there some young amateurs that are up and coming? Oh, they wouldn't be amateur because this is a pro event, right?
Right. That's correct. So the UGA is United Golfers Association, better known as the Chitlin Tour. So back in the 50s and 60s, when African Americans weren't allowed on the PGA Tour, they created their own tour. So the Sapphire Tour is, a branch of the UGA. So it's a women's tour. Sapphire Tour is the women's tour for aspiring golfers that want to become LPGA Tour professionals. So it's just an outlet, just an opportunity to have them play pro events, get the exposure, get the experience to play tour events. So we're excited to have the event here in Memphis at Pine Hill, and quite honored to have the tour select Pine Hill to be the host venue.
Just for a historic perspective, the Chitlin Tour that you just mentioned, I believe that when I first came here in 1981, I think they used to actually play here at T.O. Fuller. Am I crazy?
That's correct. Yeah. So back in the day, I grew up playing at Pine Hill as an 11-year-old. So that's my home. Like, that's where I hit my first golf ball. But all of the old guys that were retired, postmen, or they retired from Firestone or International Harvester, they all played golf, and they would always play T.O. Fuller, and that's where the UGA, quote-unquote, the Chitlin Tour played. Lee Elders, Charlie Stifford, all those guys would come to Memphis, and they played T.O. Fuller. So
I remember Lee Elder being on there. I love that golf course. I miss that golf course. It was such a cool place.
It is, but you got some Memphis legends that play there as well. So Thurman Glass, Don Holmes.
Oh, Don Holmes, yeah.
It's a lot of guys. Pledge Jones, all those guys. Willie Dub Jones, all those guys were some of my mentors, and that's where they started playing, professional golf at T.O. Fuller. So that's where the UGA started, the Chitlin Tour. And so the Sapphire Tour was just a branch for the ladies to get exposure for aspiring LPGA pros.
Does the Chitlin Tour, now known as the UGA, do they still have a circuit? Do they still play?
Now that's a good. I'm not really sure.
Okay,
that would be a question for Tariq Delavalot, who is the commissioner of the UGA as well as the Sapphire Tour. All that information can be found on the Ladies Tour, Sapphire Tour. SapphireGolfTour.com. You can get all the information about the tour and the tickets for this weekend's festivities. Thursday, we're having Mayor Paul Young is hosting an opening ceremony at Lamoignon College.
Oh, wow.
So that'll be Thursday. And then Friday, we're having Celebrity Pro-Am at Pine Hill starting at 8:30. And then Saturday and Sunday will be the pro round, beginning at 8:30 for the lady.
Do you know the prize money? I mean, if I recall, this is not chump change. There's a pretty good amount of money that has been raised for the winner of this.
I'm not really quite sure about the total purse. I think maybe first place is about, I would say, $6,500, $7,000. So it's not chump change. It's a pretty penny. So we're hoping that Memphis comes out and, bring the kids. All kids are free. We're also having a junior clinic on Saturday morning. So once the ladies tee off at 8:30, we're going to have a junior clinic about 9:30, 10 o'clock. Have the juniors come out, learn a couple things, and then they can walk around and watch the ladies play.
If I wanted to come as an adult just to watch these women, what does that cost me?
It's $25.
$25 to get in to watch. Okay.
Yes, sir. And then we'll have a VIP tent. There's brunch and beverages, and I think that's $125, if I'm not mistaken. But you can find all the info on SapphireGolfTour.com.
Okay, I'm guessing is the first event of the year. I know you said St. Louis, Chicago, maybe Atlanta. I don't know if Detroit's mm-hmm. got one.
Right.
Is this the first one of the year?
This is the first one of the year.
It's tough sometimes in Memphis to have a top-notch tournament in the middle, or really beginning middle of April. I did play your golf course yesterday. I was impressed by the condition of it for this time of year. What is your thought about the condition of the golf course, and what do you think these ladies are going to score like?
Well, like you said, it's early. It's early spring, as expected in Memphis. You know, with the changing weather, the unpredictable weather. I mean, there are a few weeds in the rough. The fairways are pretty good. The fairways are perfect. Greens are a little slow because, you know, we just hadn't been able to cut them down because of the cold temperatures. But we'll have them ready for the ladies. I think the course is only 6,200 yards. So the front nine is fairly short. The back nine is 3,500 from the tip. So that's a typical, golf course. So I think we'll set it to probably like 6,100. Now, I expect some, maybe, I don't know. I may trick it out for him, Wolo. Who knows?
So that's,
I'm thinking even par maybe.
That's like your gold tees, correct? Gold tees are about 6,100, yeah.
The black tees are the back. So that's 6,209 or something like that.
Okay.
But we'll trick it out. We'll make it comparable for the women. So for the ladies, we'll trick it out a little bit. We won't be as long, but we'll tuck some pins and try to get them behind some bunkers and stuff like that. So we'll see. I think maybe 1 or 2 under, maybe even par, may win it for 2 days.
I can't wait to see how it all plays out. And good luck on that pro-am. I know that's going to be spectacular. I hope Memphis comes out to see the future players for the women on the LPGA. I don't know that we have a promising young, the last one that I know about was Rachel Heck, who was pretty good, by the way. But I'm not right. sure. Have we got any young women pros that may be ready to make a name for themselves in this Memphis area?
Yeah, I don't know of any, but that's the whole idea, is to get children of African-American descent to see that, to inspire them to reach for that, because we don't see that often. We see basketball and football, but if we expose them to the golf clinic on Saturday morning, and they can see lady professionals and a pro like me, someone who looks like themselves, maybe they'll, it'll spark a light bulb. The light bulb will go off and say, hey, maybe I can do this. Or maybe you can caddy, or you can do agronomy and become a superintendent. Just something different,
I think if they look at you, they're going to be very happy. You're the hardest working pro around. We appreciate you. Good luck on this event.
I appreciate that, Wolo.
And we will see you sometime soon. I can promise you that. I love your golf course.
Okay, come on out this weekend. We'll love to see you out there. Bring your son, too.
Okay, I'll do it. You got it. Thank you. That is Will Keyes from Pine Hill, the Sapphire Tour's Bluff City Classic, the opening event on the tour. It is for African-American women primarily. It's a feeder, we think, for the LPGA or those that aspire to become women pros. So check it all out. This weekend, you heard the Pro-Am on Friday, a welcome on Thursday at Lemoyne Owen from Mayor Young, and then Saturday and Sunday, they will go at it at beautiful Pine Hill. We got to take a break. When we come back to Baton Rouge, we will go. And our SEC historian on this Final Four, this national championship game last night, Ron Higgins, will weigh in just a minute.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome back in as we cruise through our Tuesday. We're going down to Baton Rouge. Our SEC historian, Ron Higgins, standing by, is brought to you by Ken. That's Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. Go to their website. You will see what three generations now have done with this company. They build, they renovate, they have land, they know how to utilize land, they work with their clients so closely, and the best part, and they say this in their own commercials when they talk, when the job is done, it's really not done. They're with you the rest of the way. You become part of the company. You're like the family. The job's never totally completed. If something goes wrong, they're there. They'll let you know exactly what needs to be done. They will help you. They will guide you through the whole process. So if you love your lot and you like where you are, you don't want to go, but you want modern amenities, they're your team. If you're ready to build that dream home, you've had land in your family for years, and now you're ready, they're the ones to do it. Again, go to the website. You'll see what I'm talking about. Then call Ken. He sees little details and the big picture all at once. The place to go, really the only place to go. That's Ken Garland, Custom Home Builders. We head to Baton Rouge. Ron Higgins joins us now. Your thoughts on a very defensive but interesting, somewhat compelling championship game last night between Michigan and UConn. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. Michigan has been played great off of this tournament. The only dominant team through this whole tournament, really. And basically, they dominate, but they learn how to play both ways. Generally, when you win a national championship, you got to learn how to play with pace when somebody forces the pace on you, and they forced them. You know, of course, the pace got forced on them by UConn. And credit Dusty May, he took a team basically with all transfers. And put them together, and you know. That's the magic of being a head coach now in college, is to be able to take transfers and mold them to a team in a few short months. And getting credit, he did that. I mean, he had an old team. I think the starting age was 22. That's pretty tough to beat. I mean, I also talk about, when you get an older player more time, but they've been to the weight room more than anybody else, and they're more physical naturally. And I always thought that a lot of times the bigger, more physical teams that have more bigger bodies wins the Final Four. For some reason, it just seems to work that way. I've covered like 25 Final Fours, and a lot of times I'll walk in on a Friday, look at the Friday practices, and look at body types and thinking, that team, they got a pretty good shot. They got a lot of big physical people. And credit Michigan. I mean, they did a great job. I like Dusty May. I think he's a really good coach. He hasn't turned into a jerk like Dan Hurley yet. And hopefully Danny Boyle will get some humility from this.
I don't know. He makes the Sweet 16 at least every year. It's the first time he's lost in a championship game. Anybody from UConn's ever lost in a championship game. I don't expect that. I do think he was pretty classy, and I'm not a big Hurley fan. I mean, I watched him go insane his first year. He was a lot better than Geno. I mean, Geno lost his mind.
That was pretty pathetic, actually. And then the apology 2 days later, which, you know.
Well, he was misinformed on a couple of things, like Sarah Foster's jersey, she ripped it, and he had every right, I think, to be upset about the 6-0 discrepancy in calls. Because, let's face it, South Carolina was every bit as physical as his team was, maybe more, and no calls. So I can understand him being upset. But, man, he made a jerk of himself, and he really took a swipe at Dawn Staley. I don't understand what he was thinking. How does he get along with Kim Mulkey, at LSU.
But being, they don't cross paths that much. I think they're scheduled to play a game in the next couple of years. I know he and Pat Summitt didn't get along.
No, they didn't like each other at all.
Yeah. So, I mean, this kind of carries on that tradition, I guess. You know, in her way, Donna's as tough as Summitt was.
Oh, she is, definitely.
And Malty is, too.
Oh, yeah.
But I just, yeah, that was just like, what are you doing? You know, I mean, he, you know, his thing, rubbing before we game, the coaches shake their hands in mid-court.
Right. Well, they actually did shake hands once before the game. But I guess you're supposed to meet and BS for a while.
She shook his hand and hugged him. She shook his hand and hugged him and gave him a pat in the back. I mean, what's the guy want?
I don't know.
I mean, really. It was just like some of the people said afterwards, media people who cover women's basketball heavily, they thought it was just kind of a kind of deflection from the fact that UConn got their butt beat. and then, correct, UCLA. They came out and put it on South Carolina, and that was not surprising. I've watched UCLA closely now for 2-3 years. LSU beat them a couple of years ago, I think. It was in a regional semifinal and then lost to them last year. Lost them to them in a final last year, a regional final. So I've been tracking them for several years now. I mean, that's a team that had, a ton of seniors.
They had six seniors who'd been with the program. I mean, it's a 180 from Michigan. They'd been with the program all those years. They all played. Last year, I think they lost in the Final Four. I can't remember who they lost. It might have been to – who was it they lost to in the Final Four? They played well. That Betts is just a great player. Jaquez is just a great player. I mean, they were really, really good. And they're a rarity in the world of college sports now because they were all seniors who stuck together for a bunch of years.
And I've seen that, you know, the big girl they have has developed from year to year. It's gotten more physically tougher. I mean, 2 years ago, you could, you know, go at her and she would just, you know, not say back off, but it wasn't like she wasn't the presence she is now. I mean, she played that South Carolina game, she saved them late with a great block.
She did. Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of UCLA's coach, but.
Really? What have you got against Corey Close?
Well, a couple of years ago, she brought up something about a story written by LA Times writer, basically disparaging LSU's women's basketball team. You know, call them a bunch of hood rats, basically. But you know, she's been. But I'm happy for him this sense. Anybody that stays in the business that long, like I think she's like 15 years at UCLA, and you know, and the school sticks with her. Good for them. I'm happy for her winning the national championship. I'm still not a big fan of what she said, but I like coaches who stay at one place. The school allows them to work through stuff and build. And they finally won a national championship. So I'm all for people who've been in this business for a while who, you know, I don't think she's a terrible person. I think she's got caught something bad a couple of years ago with it.
Yeah.
And that the guy who wrote that was forced to apologize. Not forced. They told me, you know, this is what you, first of all, they actually got in the paper. The editors were like, what are you doing? But anyway, all that aside, for Corey Close, I'm glad she won one. I'm always for glad who coaches has never won a national championship before who put a lot of time and effort into the sport to win.
Yeah.
So that was good.
15 years to head coach and assistant there before, learned from John Wooden. She's been around that long, so that was impressive. Back to the men for just a minute. Michigan, depending on what Ade Mera and Morez Johnson do, because they could come back, and their starting lineup would be Cadeau at point guard, who was the most most outstanding player, the MOP. Then there's Trey McKinney, who was terrific. Then the Johnson and Mara combination, and they've signed a kid who's number 18 in the top 100 from ESPN, Brandon McCoy. They're picked to go back-to-back. If those two guys, Johnson and Mara, stay, do you believe that? because there's a lot of teams, if people stay, and because of NIL money, they could. You think Michigan goes back-to-back?
No.
No?
I think it's almost impossible to go back-to-back. I know UConn. I just think it's impossible to go back-to-back because right now, I mean, rosters change so much. I mean, you got to pin people down. I mean, your coach has to re-recruit their own roster. And then if somebody gets a whim, they want to leave all of a sudden for better money or whatever. And then I tell you, a lot of times, too, if you've been on a national championship team, you feel like you've done all you can do at that place. And, you know, if you have a chance to go somewhere else and maybe, I don't know, more playing time or whatever the reason, you might do it. And you do it with no regrets because you say, okay, I won a national championship, but not like I didn't win one. And it's really hard to win two in a row. Really is.
Yeah.
Very rare does it happen. You know, Florida did it way back in the day, but well, all their guys, all those guys came back, and that was before NIL money.
Right.
The temptation of NIL money is really great. Because, a lot of kids look at it like, okay, I won a national championship, but I'm getting this offer from somewhere else. And this money is security. Maybe I should do this. And they do it.
His NIL budget, he admitted on the Today Show, Dusty made it, was $10 million this year. I got to figure that will go up if they want to continue. You mentioned Florida. They're picked third behind Michigan, then Duke. UConn, by the way, is four. But they're saying everybody would come back. You would get Condon back, Chinyelu back. You would get Flan back, Klavzar back, Isaac Brown. You think all those guys are coming back?
Well, the only guy I know that's not coming back is the world's tallest human. He's already announced that
he's transferring because he never got to play.
Never got to play. I don't know. I mean, that's always say they're going to come back, and until they come back, you never know. I mean, you hear people say they're going to come back, and all of a sudden, they don't. And then I don't think until next season who's going to show up. I mean, they can say all summer they're coming back. You never know. It's just like that's why it's so hard to be a head coach now. I mean, I know people the general public didn't have much sympathy for head coaches in football or basketball, that they cite, well, these guys make billions, blah, blah, blah. And that's true. But the fact that basically you feel like you got to recruit every waking hour that you're in a job, not just, and you've got to coach your team hard. And some guys may not like that. Some guys may transfer because they don't like it. So it's like, the coaches stick to their guns and coach hard. They lose guys, or they cannot coach hard, but not coach those guys hard, and it disrupts the whole team. So it's so much harder to be a head coach now than it was 10 years ago because of all the people you got to deal with. You used to deal with parents, okay?
Yeah.
Basically, now you're
dealing
with
agents.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's like got called. Who is this guy?
Let's say this. 10 years ago, they weren't making the kind of money they're making now either. It's
probably
worth the headache. All right, last thing, because you're our SEC historian, and we compare the two best leagues we know are the Big Ten and the SEC. There's no question about that. Around these parts, there is territorial favoritism. I understand that. Everybody always thinks their best is their group. But the Big Ten is making a case. They have now won both the national titles, UCLA for the women, obviously Michigan for the men. Indiana won the football championship. Indiana's won the last, the Big Ten, I should say, has won the last three football championships. And, you can hang your hat on baseball. Guess who's number one in the country today? UCLA, Big Ten. This stuff is a pretty strong statement by the other league where it means a lot.
Yeah, I'll say this for baseball. We'll see what happens in the end. But I agree with you. I think basically, let's be fair about this. You judge a league on national championships. And right now, the Big Ten is a better league because of the national championships they won in football. you know, in basketball. You know, and that's the way the SEC looked at it when they were claiming championships for the better league. So, you know, if it flips the other way, you can't deny that. I mean, right now, they are the better league. And you don't know when it's going to flip back. You know, will they put a run as long as the SEC had? That's pretty hard to do. But, you know, they could. But, you know, I do hope the playoff doesn't get more than 16 teams. Beyond that is ridiculous.
16 is good. I'd like 16, yeah. And I certainly hope they keep the group of five in there.
Yeah, I agree.
With a seat at the table.
So I don't think it needs to be bent to 24 just so the Big Ten, the SEC, can load up on teams in this thing. I think that's highly unfair.
That's what their two commissioners want. You know that?
The SEC doesn't. The SEC, Sankey has said numerous times, and most people agree with him, he wants 16 teams. That's it.
Right. No. I get that. But they want all those extra teams so their guys get in.
Because
it's 12 now. Those four schools that are going to be added, they're coming from the SEC and the Big Ten.
But I think the Big Ten was 24 teams.
I know. I don't know if they're not doing that for negotiating stance or not. We'll see. We'll see how it all plays out.
But all the conferences agreeing with SEC, they're saying 16 teams is enough. And we both agree in that.
Yeah.
There's not 24 teams in the nation who deserve to play for a playoff football.
I agree.
That does not.
I agree. 100% with you on that. As always, we appreciate it. We will address maybe that very topic next Tuesday.
All right, Wolo. Take care. We'll see you.
You got it. That is our SEC historian in Baton Rouge. That is Ron Higgins. We take a break. The portal is open. I haven't seen any transactions yet, and I've been scouring. Have you seen anything, Landon Schmidt? I'm not exactly sure. What's the official opening time for the portal? Is there a time like noon or anything of that nature?
I know for the what was it? The NFL, it was like 3 in the afternoon Eastern time.
Maybe Munsey knows, because he's going to let us know who may be coming, who might not be coming. We'll check in with the beat writer from the Commercial Appeal on Tiger basketball in a minute. Jason Munns is right around the corner.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin. All we hear is...
The portal is open. It officially opened up at midnight. There are more than 1,000 D1 men's basketball players in that portal. Who's coming? We know who's gone. Jason Munns from the Commercial Appeal has been on top of this thing the whole time. Good morning, Mr. Munsey. Any surprises yet? I've been scouring. You haven't come up with a transfer yet. Nobody's committed to Memphis at this point.
No. I mean, we are, less than 12 hours into the portal officially opening. I mean, I'm sure there are more, but, I feel like there's probably less than two handfuls of people who have already committed, in the country.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that immediately comes to mind is the guy that played at Belmont last year who's going to Tennessee, and he committed, a week ago or a few days ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's still very early. And the thing is, I think some people get a little confused by this, and I'll throw myself in there. I lose sight of this too from time to time, because everybody talks about the portal window being April 7th to April 21st.
It
closes on the 21st. That does not mean that you have to be committed by that date.
Correct.
That just means that you can no longer enter after that date and still be eligible for the next season. So it doesn't mean that everybody's going to commit in these next 2 weeks. It just means that you have to be in the portal to be eligible to play next year.
You've got basically 15 days to get in the portal, and then you can leave that portal anytime, honestly.
Yes, but time is, to your point, yes, we have not gotten any, or Memphis has not gotten any commitments yet, and I don't think that's like a cause of concern or anything, right. but certainly time is of the essence.
All right. There is a new GM since we talked, Gabriel Harris, who is with the Sacramento Kings G League. He has been the GM of that G League team. I know he is in our agent Andy Schiffman's Rolodex. He did admit to that last Friday. But he's also the GM of a team in the G League playoffs. How hard can you work if you're still working for one team and plan for this new team?
So I would say yes. Like physically, he is still with the Stockton Kings, who are now in the G League Championship Series. It's a best of three series that starts, I think, like today or tomorrow. It starts pretty soon, and it's a best of three series. And they won it all last year. His first year as the general manager, and they may do it again. As I reported, I put this out on social media last week. I first got wind of Gabriel Harris being the leader, the preferred candidate for Memphis back on March 25th. And in subsequent conversations and, things that I've been told by various sources, he has been working on behalf of Memphis since at least March 25th. And that's like, what, 2 weeks ago now? So, And he continues to do so. And I mean, by working for Memphis, like obviously you don't have to be in Memphis to be able to do, important things. Like you can still be on the phone with Penny Hardaway. You can still be, having Zoom meetings with the coaching staff at Memphis to like figure out what they're going to do. And like, strategy sessions and those sorts of things. And then, even though the portal didn't open until today, GMs can have communications with agents and handlers and representation. You just can't talk to players yet until now. So he's been doing all those things, like for at least 2 weeks. He's been doing all those things. And, if you're talking about, like, yes, the team that he is the current general manager of is still playing, but like, at this point you're just kind of there. Like what can you really do when like the team is in place? There's no transactions that he's having to worry about. Like he's just kind of along for the ride and being there to support the team that he's, that he was a part of. And he was, a big, an executive for the last three seasons now.
Back to the portal. The Tigers had eight guys who could come back. Of those eight, at this point, we know Thedford, a possible starter, certainly a rotation player, and William Wharton will be a back-of-the-bench guy, a project, who's got somewhat of an upside, I think.
Yeah, I think he's got promise.
They're the only two guys that we know for sure. So let's take a look at the one guy who didn't say yes or no yet, and that is Aaron Bradshaw, the guy who, frankly, was a bust at Ohio State, was a bust at Kentucky, and started to get it a little bit, but I wouldn't exactly say a huge success in Memphis. What is his status?
We're still waiting. And honestly, if you know anything about Aaron Bradshaw, this isn't all that surprising. He's kind of the beat of his own drum guy. In a good way, like that doesn't, it, you know, it, it, this is not overly surprising to me, at least, that he is, that we are now, like, in a day and age when everybody, when very early on what someone's going to do. And I still think, the signs are pointing toward him not returning. But yes, we are here on April 7th, and the transfer portal is open, and he has not
entered it yet.
Well, he has not said anything publicly. Right. And so, yeah.
Which is interesting to me. The last time I saw him and talked to him was at Birmingham when the Tigers were losers to Tulane in the tournament. He told me for sure he was coming back. He loved Penny. He was coming back. So something happened along the way. I have no idea.
That is my understanding.
And something did happen.
It could
very well also be that, you know, that was before he was given during his exit interview his pay offer and what his role would be. And he might not have liked that.
Yeah, I mean, yes. My impression has been since that time and since even like after the exit meetings that he was all in on coming back. And, you know, but something there subsequent to that, there has been like, I mean, these things are always so fluid. Like they have the potential to be extremely fluid. And so that, you know, something happened and he is not expected back at this particular point. But again, I heard that like a week ago that he wasn't expected back because of something that happened. And then here we are a week later and we still haven't heard one way or the other from him. So I don't know.
Simon Majak was a guy, I talked to him before that tournament, but he was coming back also for Penny. He's a guy who's still a project, but man, has he got an upside. Do you think he's entered the portal for a negotiating stance?
No. He's definitely leaving, and it is not his like choice. His preference is to stay, and like because I talked to him on Friday, and he made it very, very clear. Like he was borderline despondent when I talked to him. Like he really, really likes Memphis, really likes Penny Hardaway, definitely wanted to stay, but you know there are extenuating circumstances that aren't always. They're not always apparent, or they're not always like traditional, like just like, you know, he's obviously, he obviously came from after having played a few professional seasons in Serbia, and he's from South Sudan. Like he came here, after those things, like, and so, you know, he's got an agent, and that's the way he explained it to me, is his agent is calling the shots for him, and that he doesn't really have much of a say in his immediate future. And so, it's unfortunate, but that's the arrangement that he has set up with the agent that he has signed with in Serbia.
Let's talk about three other names. PJ Haggerty, Rowan Brambaugh, and a new one in the mix, DJ Wagner, grandson of DeJuan Wagner. Grandson of Milton Wagner, excuse me. You're right.
Yes.
How feasible are any of these three? Is there a chance you could get a combination of two of those three?
I think the most likely scenario is that Memphis gets DJ Wagner. I'm not saying that's definitely going to happen, but I think that's the most likely scenario. I think certainly Memphis still, I think, has at the very least like a slight chance with PJ Haggerty and or Rowan Brambaugh, but I think they've got a better chance of landing DJ Wagner. And, you know, I would think that would mean that if they got DJ Wagner, I would think that would mean that puts them out of the running for like firmly out of the running, for good for Brambaugh and Haggerty. But, I don't think that there's a realistic scenario where you get multiple of those three. Of those three, I think the most likely, based on what I'm hearing now, the most likely is DJ Wagner.
All right. We have 1 minute. Give me a name or two of a big, a name or two of a point guard, because those are the two critical ingredients beyond the scorer.
Yeah, I mean, DJ Wagner can, like, he's a point guard. So there's that. But he can also, you know, he can also be an off guard as well. And so, I think... The natural big that a lot of people are thinking about is Anton Bonk. He's the 7'2" guy from Charlotte. He played at Charlotte last year. I think he started his career at Providence. And he was pretty good for Charlotte last year. And obviously, Memphis brought in Trevor Deloach, the assistant coach at Charlotte last season. And so there, people are sort of drawing some conclusions there. And so I do think that Memphis is going to be in the running for him. But they're gonna you know, pursue others as well. But he's probably the most obvious candidate right now. And then point guard, I think Memphis is going to make a push for Jordan Friesen, the former Overton star who was an all-conference player at Chattanooga last year. Yeah.
Jason, to be continued next Tuesday. We appreciate you, my friend.
All right, thanks, Will.
That is our guy from the Commercial Appeal, Jason Munns. He's brought to you by Miramichi. You want the true total golfing experience from their huge driving range with golf balls aplenty, their practice facilities, a sand trap, a chipping green, a regular green, it's huge, to just the beautiful, beautiful area that it's in. The back nine's like a walk through the woods with hills and a river that goes through it. I mean, it's just gorgeous. And it's only 25 minutes away from my driveway in East Memphis, not Millington and Woodstock. This is the total golf experience. You can be a member if you fall in love with it for a real good price. Go check it out. It's got a full menu with their clubhouse, great food, great people. It's the true golfing experience. It's Miramichi. Go check it out and tell them we sent you. That'll do it for us today. We've got a big Wednesday tomorrow, the first where we pick our Masters champion. We've got the whole crew, Johnny Lyon, Mickey Barker, Greg Hines from Windyke will be involved in the process. Joe Dank, Dennis Phillippe, that's all tomorrow. Johnny Radio is next. Have a great day, everyone.